Welcome to the People of Canterbury Baptist, a podcast where we meet the people of Canterbury Baptist Church in Melbourne, Australia, hear their stories and explore ideas relevant to our church and community. My name is Stephen, and for today's episode, let's continue our conversation with Anita. Anita, it's a wonderful privilege to be back with you again. Thank you again for taking this time to talk with us.
Thank you.
Now, when we finished off last time, I think we had a wonderful insight into your life. I think we had left you off as a 16-year-old girl. But last week, or last time, you began to talk about this experience of your father and your family being forcibly moved to Germany.
Not forcible.
Okay, so explain to me some of the circumstances behind that. Yeah.
Just they put it to my father that being like that is much better for him and his family to go to Germany. But they didn't say, if you don't come, you will be, I don't know what.
Do you remember that time as a 16-year-old? Do you have much memory of your parents wondering whether they should stay in Romania or move to Germany?
Oh, yes, because it was just before Christmas, I remember, in November. And we were already prepared for Christmas. So, yes, it was hard.
How did you move? Did you move by train? Was there some vehicle that took you?
It was 22nd, I remember. I don't know why 22nd is always the same. I came from Germany here. On the 22nd, I left Germany to come to Australia. And 22nd of November, we left the Romanian. We went with a horse-drawn couch to the 5 o'clock in the morning to the station, and from there we went to Cernavoda, which is on the entrance of the Danube in Romania, but that's the entrance to the river, the Flows. So we board a little ship, which it was the first time on the Danube put to this. I don't know how many we were. And meet in Yugoslavia. I forgot the name of the station in Yugoslavia. There in Yugoslavia, they were prepared for us places outside. It was winter.
So was this a planned move? So was it just you, or were there a whole bunch of people moving from Romania to Germany? So there's a whole crowd of you.
Yes. There was a whole people from Dobrogea. It's in Romania. Then Constanța is in Dobrogea. So...
Oh. It's all a distant memory?
I can't remember anymore.
Do you remember arriving in Germany and your first impression? So just give us a bit of an insight. So had World War II started by now?
I don't know.
Okay.
I really can't remember. Mm. But the trip to it from Yugoslavia was 1 week we stayed there in tents. Intense, and was very, very good prepared for with heating and this. Then we left after a week to go to Austria. In Austria, they put us in monastery. And I'm trying for a few weeks to remember the town we went first time, the monastery. It was on the border of Switzerland with Austria, and there was a monastery up there. And we stayed there for about 6 months because the German was building a city of 150 five, not three, units for the new people, because they draw people from the whole world. So we had to stay 6 months up there, and they shifted us then further down to another monastery near Salzburg. That we had very good times up there. Oh, Austria is beautiful. And from there then, after years, in a monastery, the buildings was nearly finished, and then they took us from Austria and took us to Germany, Northwest Germany, near Braunschweig, Hanover, Salzgitter. And then we stayed in the camps again for a few weeks till they decided what unit will suit us as a family. And then we were sent up there to live.
So this trip from Romania to Germany, this took you a few years.
A year.
It took a year.
Yes, yeah.
With these stopovers, particularly in Austria and staying in monasteries. So that was a much slower and longer process.
Yes. Why they done that, I don't know. Where they could have taken us in summertime, or the people there and not hurry them like that. But
so what was it like living in Germany during the war?
As long as you've done your job, no politics, do your job, nobody bothered us, nobody. But those unit, it was like a commission houses, but together. They were in one entrance of the building was 6 units. 5 were foreigners and 1 German. So it was all right as long as we behaved. No trouble. I remember the sad part only was my father was sick. And he really was trying to get better. So, and they didn't allow to stay home. He had to go to work until a doctor was brought into the units and could verify that you were not fit to work.
What work did your father do in Germany?
Building.
So he continued as a builder.
It was still not finished. It was still folding up. Yeah, they were still building.
Are your memories of your time in Germany, are they happy memories?
I wasn't. Well, during the war, we didn't have anybody, really. We met few young people from Constanza. But we were not together. We didn't have. It was only the people we knew on a ship on they were with us, but not really.
So you went from Romania, which sounds like a wonderful community in which you knew lots of people and felt very welcomed, and then you found yourself in this public housing or commission housing style block.
Yeah.
In Germany, in the middle of the war, and actually it sounds like feeling fairly isolated and separated from people.
It's surprising how you can get used to it. Then in Germany, I continued with dressmaking. It was 2 dressmaking. One was a Romanian. He used to be the royal family dressmaker, and he opened a shop up there, and I went to work for him, for work in Tusao. And my sister found another. But he was a Polish, I think. He was a foreigner. They had shops. So I worked up there. So then after they took him to go to the army, the shop was no more there. But I thought, while I was still young, 18, I thought, now, I like the Red Cross. And I went, and then I heard that the Red Cross are preparing first aid for to help. And I thought, instead to go to the ammunition factory and work in it, I thought I worked there. And I've been 4 years with them. Yeah.
So what did working for the Red Cross in Germany look like?
What I learned, well, the war was coming near and near and near. Well, I learned everything. I learned 3 months I had practical theory, just a little bit theory. And then somebody said, look, you are good for going and have some practice in the hospital. So it was a little hospital. Again, Hitler took all the good from Grafs and all these high people, their houses, and they found, not far from us, about 5 kilometers, found a nice home where they could make a small hospital. So they had it for women, 15 person beds for women, and then upstairs they were for men, and they had a room where it was for infection people. Well, up there I went and worked in that. But up there I saw everything. I've been in the operating room. I saw everything.
In the Red Cross, did you specialize in a particular kind of work or a particular set of skills? Were there things that you were particularly good at doing for the Red Cross?
No, it was just the way you had to do the bandages. They had to look nice and presented that. But I'm telling you something. What it reminds me, even now, while I love Red Cross, why I love Red Cross. When we started the work, we had to have examination. And they said, the Red Cross lady came and said, now, your brother is here and your enemy is there. Now, both of them are wounded. Who do you start to help first? And of course, that the young people will say, my brother. I said, no, no, you are in the Red Cross now. Who is it? He says, your enemy. If he is worse than your brother, is the enemy. And that I never forget. For me, that was a lesson. They even as an old person, I never forget. Yeah.
Working in the hospital, you would have seen a lot of the war wounded come through, I would imagine.
No, up there. Oh, no, really? No, that, no. If you have time to tell you about what happened, but with the, because that would be much better to tell you what happened after the war came.
Yes,
because,
please.
During the war, we have to work, we worked, we behaved, and that was all right. But after the war, there was more friction between the people. The poor people, which we didn't know about, I have to tell you, I didn't know about the concentration camp. I've been in... I have been sent to Berlin for few weeks. You've been sent all over when you are already a nurse, and to people will have need of help, and you have to make your own mind who needs help up there, because there were poor people with children, they didn't have help, husbands in the war, and you have to decide honestly, does she need it? Because the war was exactly on the ground where we lived. And I had a position behind my, not far where my father and mother lived, a place where we looked after the wounded, yeah? And we had it only in the underneath the house where we had the beds and all this put. Now, when the next American reached the next village from us, they were shooting the German and this together. Well, we had to be ready for them to pick up the soldiers. And there was 11 soldiers wounded. One died. His wife just had twins before he was killed. And he was killed up there. And in effect, it was so wrong that it was everybody ran away because they were frightened. They were taken as prisoner. But I was 21. And then my friend up there was 21. We were young, and we were dying. So 11 men up there underneath, and we are to what? They ran away with the ambulances, with everything, nothing left. And we had a Red Cross sign, and we went on the road, and opened that, and the Polish man with a big pick truck came along and saw that and stopped. And he said, "What do you want?" I said, "We have here 11 soldiers. We want to take them to hospital." He said, "All right, what we do? Mattresses from the underneath where they were, put them on the in a truck, put the soldiers, carry the soldiers, two of us and him, on a truck." And we took him to go to the biggest hospital, not far, about 6 kilometers from us. And we had to pass a pass. And the petrol ran out. "So what are you doing now?" "Nothing. No mobile like today. No, nothing." Suddenly, American jeeps and that behind us. I got scared. Anyhow, they were very kind. They came down. What happened? We told them, and they took him in the give them cigarettes first. Who wanted to smoke, they tagged them and put them in the ambulance and took them away. But where, I don't know, because we wanted them to be in the hospital in our place. But we don't know where they took them. So I remember back, but what they done with me and with the girl, the other girl, they took us few kilometers away where it was a type of hospital. And they put us there, and there was all the people there, not wounded, but sick from working under very bad condition. Some of them which I didn't learn about, was bone tuberculosis, we used to, I had 16 in my barrack. And every morning when I went in, was one dead sitting up. And food under the bed because he was so hungry to eat and he couldn't eat. I was up there, I don't know that I didn't get the tuberculosis, I don't know why. Anyhow, I was a few times, but was a doctor which I worked in that little hospital. He was from Korea, Ukraine, Dr. Dimeshko. He came and he said, they want to send you to Russia with a to send me in the airplane with the people they survived there. And he said, I don't like you to go. So he said, I'll put there that you've got tuberculosis. So I didn't go to Russia. Otherwise, I had to accompany the other people to Russia. And he was frightened that I might not be coming back. So that was a God, you see. That was a God, but that is,
That's amazing that you stayed on as the front line got closer and closer and the Americans came closer to the German soldiers.
Yes.
And everyone else had left. It's amazing that you stayed and that you fulfilled your duty as a Red Cross officer.
You see, I don't know. I think I always been so when I promise somebody something, I always done my duty if I could. And that's what my father taught us to. An honest man never gets back, so,
During your time in Germany, were you able to continue attending a church? Was church community
still? My father, and I don't know where he found that other chap, but because it was nearly, I was married, I had Julian, and I didn't follow. But I remember he used to go to a chap, they used to visit us, to take him every Sunday to church. And he didn't want to go. He was always hiding when my husband, what do I have with my husband? Every time he went to pick him up to go to church on Sunday, he was hiding. Until one day an American jeep passed his street and killed his little five-year girl. But it was by accident. I mean, this soldier, I don't know how he missed it. It was the little last. And then he became a Christian. True tragedy.
I'd love to spend more time actually talking about how you met your husband and the birth of your children and just some more details behind that story. But I think we've maybe covered enough just for this conversation now. So how about we draw this conversation to a close? But it'd be a great privilege if we could come back and maybe pick up the story and start with how you met your husband and then just keep learning more about your life.
All right.
So thank you, Anita, for your time. You've been very generous.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to everyone who has tuned in to listen. This podcast is produced and presented by Stephen Field on behalf of Canterbury Baptist Church, Melbourne, Australia. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email cbc@canterburybaptist.org. If you're a member or regular attender of this church, how about you get in touch with Anita directly and thank her for her contribution today? Theme music is a song, The First Step, by Andrew Naylor from his album Two Stones. This album is available wherever you purchase or stream your music. Join us next time as we continue our chats with the people of Canterbury Baptist.